show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, a Baseball Prospectus affiliate. Folks, we got some things to talk about with Royals baseball, milestones, etc., but we'll get into that in a second. The man who is a milestone in and of himself, Michael Engel, is with me. I, of course, am Jeff Herr here. Mike, how are you doing on this evening? It's starting to get a little bit into that fall weather, starting to get more of that football weather coming up as we wind down this baseball season here.
Yeah, I think this time for real, like, we were teased a couple weeks ago, and then it was like 95 again. And I was like, oh, that sucks. Yeah, I'm ready for it. And I'm good. I got a flu shot today on my lunch break. So
nice.
What a responsible adult thing to do. Well, someone said that they were doing them in the building. So I was like, all right, I don't really have a good excuse. And
yeah,
my mom's going to bother me 10 different times until I do it. And I either would have to lie to her or just go ahead and do it. So I went ahead and did it.
Fair enough.
By insurance anyway. It's, you know, there's no reason to not. Do it.
Definitely.
So I'm good there. Well,
good job.
Yeah. Yay. Herd immunity.
Herd immunity indeed. So as we wind down this baseball season, we talked about milestones, and one of them that they hit, first one that we'll talk about tonight, is not necessarily a good one, but it's there. It is 100 losses in a season. So it's been a while, actually, since they've had 100 losses in a season. 2006 was the last time?
2006, is that right? Yeah.
So 12 years. Of course, that would be 1 year after the worst season in Royals history.
Right, which was one year after the other worst year in Royals history.
Right. Yes.
Which was 2 years after the worst year in Royals history to that point, the 2002 season, where the Royals first lost 100 games, which you can hear all about on our award-winning episode from, I don't remember when, July?
That sounds right.
It was our episode number 100, so
yes.
It's back there. We kind of chronicled the whole season and
indeed,
ups and downs.
It was
stuff.
That was a fun episode.
Yeah. Yeah, even though it was 100 losses.
Yes. What has not been fun has been, you know, having a podcast about it. Well, it's not. Podcast is always fun, but having the team, the podcast is about having over 100 losses in a season. Not exactly the most fun thing.
No.
But we've made our fun, as we did with the retrospective on the 2002 Royals. And, you know, as we mentioned during the season, of course, we surmised that at some point it would kind of cross over into being a fun team to watch despite the record. And they've, you know, we've talked about it in recent shows that's where it's gone, and it's definitely there, and it's still being a lot of fun. I mean, we've got a lot of fun things to watch so far, and we'll kind of get into that in a second. But when you look at this team, so the Royals are the second worst record in baseball. I think they're pretty safe. I should say the Orioles are pretty safe in that they'll have the number one pick next year. The Royals will be right behind them. The Royals need two wins in their next five games to not have the worst record in Royals history. So that's something, you know, 40%, winning 40% of their games. It's been tough for them so far to have that kind of a win percentage, but hopefully they can make that happen. If not, they have to win one just to tie the Royals all-time record.
They're one strike away right now as we record this on Wednesday night. So
there you go.
They're up 6-1, two outs, two strikes, in the ninth in Cincinnati.
Which would ensure they're not the standing alone as the worst Royals team ever.
Right.
So, and then of course they win another one. But if they were to lose out from here, somehow miraculously lose tonight and then the rest of the way, they would be the worst record wise, the worst Royals team in history. But
right.
It appears that they'll hopefully be able to dodge that bullet. So, you know, we've, as I mentioned, we've talked recently about how this, there's been some positive things as of late in the last, you know, month or two of the season, as a lot of these younger guys have gotten to play. But when you kind of look back at the season as a whole, you see them 55 and 102, you know, likely narrowly avoiding being the worst team in Royals history. How do you feel about this season as we sit right now? Actually, I just got the notification. It's over. Yep, for the Royals.
They just won, so.
So yep. They have 56 wins now and 102 losses. Yep. So they are.
If they get swept at home against Cleveland, then they would tie 2005 for most losses.
Yes. So they're no worse than the worst team ever in Royals history.
Right.
If that makes any sense.
Yeah.
But so how do you, I mean, how do you, when you kind of recount the season in your head, how do you think about it? How do you feel?
Well, I mean, when we look at them, the last couple of months, they haven't been that bad. We've mentioned this before. I mean, they're 29 and 34 in the second half of the season. So that just shows you how poor they played in the first half, especially in June and in a good chunk of April. That really set them back and really kind of sets the tone for everything. But in the last, you know, the last couple months, we've talked about them over and over. Ryan O'Hearn has been phenomenal. Alberto Mondesi has been very, very good. You know, even today he hit a deep fly to left field. He kind of trotted to first thinking it was going to get caught. It did not get caught. Instead, he turned on the burners to get the second and realized, oh, he could also get the third. So he kind of like stopped twice, still made it to third. Then on a chopper to the pitcher, they got an out at first. Mondesi scored from third. I mean, that kind of excitement. And it's like he's done that a couple of times. Like he scored from second on just a routine single because they threw it in a little bit lazily into second. And he just kind of took the base. And he's done that on top of hitting, I think he's at 11 homers or something. You know, just a lot of fun to kind of watch him.
Go ahead. Sorry, just to add, but don't look now, but Mondesi has pushed his way into being, by WAR, the third best player on the team. He has the third highest WAR on the team right now.
Right. He's played in 71 games.
Yeah.
Which says a lot about the rest of the team. It says a lot about him, too, though.
Yes, it does.
Because he's above, you know, guys like Mike Moustakas. Alex Gordon's had an okay enough season. Sal Perez has had a lot of power and has been a lot more well-rounded all year. So, yeah, I mean, to be in that kind of group is, you know, that's pretty good. It's 12 home runs, to be specific.
Yes.
But, yeah, I mean, that's the kind of stuff. And then, you know, Whit Merrifield's been consistent all year. He's had, apparently, they keep track of records like this. He's had four different 12-game hitting streaks, which is a Royals record.
Okay.
Number 12. It's a very Billy Butler has a hit in every series or in, you know, like consecutive series type of record from, I don't know, 2012 or something like that. 2011, 2012. Which meant nothing. I mean, it was like whatever. But, you know, whatever. You want to track. So, you know, he's been doing that. He's hitting 300. He stole his 40th and 41st base. Tonight, which leads the American League. He should win that stolen base crown for the second consecutive year. And all he's done, I mean, he hasn't really had a big lull at all season.
Super
been pretty consistent, pretty much start to finish. He's walking a lot. Great season, too. And in fact, the combination of 40 stolen bases and 40 doubles has only been done now by five players in the American League ever. And Johnny Damon was one of those. Brian Roberts did it twice. Alfonso Soriano did it once, and Jose Altuve did it once. And now Whit Merrifield has done it.
That's pretty good company.
So, that power-speed combo is right there. I mean, it's not 40-40 as far as, like, the Jose Canseco home runs, but, I mean, you know, it's still impressive. I mean, it's that limited of a group. So, and he's also, as of the end of tonight's game, unless JD pinch hit, he should be one up in for the league lead in base hits, which has never been done in Royals history. I think they've been fairly close. Willie Wilson led the American League with 230 base hits in 1980, and he stole 79 bases, but Ricky Henderson stole 100. So you could throw a rock and find, you know, hit someone who stole 50 bases in the 80s. So, you know, and Wilson also, like, he won a batting title a couple years later and, you know, still wasn't the case that he led in both categories. So, you know, that's fairly unprecedented. You know, it doesn't happen that often. You know, those are a lot of really good complete things. And then you add in, you know, that, you know, the pitching at times kind of rounded out, you know, some of the rookies that you really didn't expect much from pitched pretty well. So all in all, I mean, it's still not going to be a good season, but if they got swept by Cleveland and ended up tying that 106 loss season, it really would not have the same feeling as that season, because that was just so miserable. I mean, it was, you know, 2005 was, you know, the third time in 4 years that they lost 100 games. The 2003 season was sandwiched in there as a random 500 season. Just, it looks silly, but otherwise they lost 100 games 4 out of 5 years. And, you know, there's no good feeling in any of that. So, yeah, it definitely feels like a much different team. I feel a lot more optimism as we wind down on this year. So, yeah, I mean, all in all, they've done kind of all right in the second half, especially for a group that, you know, again, you know, we kind of Mondesi was someone that, you know, hey, let's get what we can out of him. And he's definitely given a lot. O'Hearn didn't really have a lot of expectations on him. He's been really good. Dozier's been a lot better in the second half too. So a lot of good things kind of go on, you know, kind of all over the place. So it's a lot better feeling now than if you'd have told me the Royals will lose at least 102 back in May or June, would not have any optimism. But now there's, you know, you see glimmers, you see some guys who have contributed, and that's kind of the point, is you want these guys to get the opportunity to play and take advantage of it. And so far in the second half, they've been doing that.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm really glad that you mentioned how it would feel different than the 2005, 2006, those teams of that unfortunately awful era, because I was going to bring up the same point, because it's absolutely completely agree. I think that I just remember, and maybe it's I'm not sure what the word is, whatever the opposite of nostalgia is, but, you know, maybe it's that when I look back on it and just think about how horrible it was. But, like, even trying to just rack my brain, I really just cannot recall anything, like, good that had happened, you know, in that 2005, 2004, 5, 6 series, you know, era there. Because, you know, that was, you know, all the Jermaine Dye, Johnny Damon, Carlos Beltran, all those guys are gone. They'd been traded at that point. I guess Carlos Beltran technically was the trade deadline 2004. So that was, he was technically part of that, at least first half of that season. But, you know, after that, you know, those guys were all gone. And the Billy Butlers, Alex Gordon, those people, they hadn't, you know, shown up yet. They hadn't even been drafted. And, you know, they were drafted in that era because of how bad those teams were. They could draft those guys. But, so it just, there's just nothing that comes to mind where you think, oh, well, you know, at least that was good, I guess, you know, cause you could, even though the teams in those mid 2000s, you know, weren't all that great. You had, like, okay, Joaquin Soria was good and fun to watch, Zach Greinke, you know, won a Cy Young in 2009, like those things were fun. But, that whole era there, just nothing. But this team, if the Royals can put this together. And we've hinted before how this or we've discussed before how people kind of hinted that maybe they're targeting 2020 or 2021 is the hope that kind of reopening the window, if you will. If they're able to actually make that happen, it's hard to say look fondly back on this year, but you know, you do kind of look fondly back on that time when you say, okay, that was the point we knew something was real. You know, so this year there was a lot of speculation about Whit Merrifield. Did he just have a good year? Is he just, you know, people weren't you know, hadn't studied up on him enough to know how to get him out, etc. Well, I mean, I think we've answered that question. I think he is for real. We know that because of this season. You know, and then I think if Alberto Mondesi turns out to be a star, then you look back on this season and say, okay, that's where he got back on track. That's where we knew, okay, this guy is an exciting player that we're going to be seeing for years to come here. Because, you know, at the beginning of the season, people had their doubts, rightfully so. And, you know, if Ryan O'Hearn ends up being more than just a flash in the pan, you look back and you say, man, he broke out that end of that 2018 season. So, you know, there's some positive. Even if none of that happens, you can still look back and say, well, even though he didn't break out, Ryan O'Hearn had a good end of that season. And Alberto Mondesi played well. And Whit Merrifield had himself a hell of a season. And that's going to be a trivia question. You know, who was the last or only Royals player to go 40-40 with doubles and stolen bases, you know? Whit Merrifield's going to be that guy. So pretty impressive for something like that. And, so there, you know, there's at least a little bit more positivity to look back on this year, especially as it portends to, you know, the next couple of years than that bygone era that we hope to never have to deal with ever again.
Yeah. And, yeah, because that time ended up with the whole new GM.
Yeah, I mean,
and
that was
a complete rebuilding of the farm system.
Yes, one of the
and still a lot of time to get back in relevance.
10 years, basically.
Not just contention,
yeah,
relevance.
Almost 10 years. But that kind of segues. We kind of touched on it a little bits and pieces in that discussion, but that kind of segues into the next point we wanted to talk about, which are some positive milestones. So we talked about you discussed the Whit Merrifield milestone. That's probably the most positive at this point, you know, being the 40 stolen base, 40 doubles in a season. That's incredibly impressive. You mentioned how elite or how small of a group that is. And, you know, that's pretty crazy. And we keep going back to it, or at least I do, but how awesome it is to see something like this happen to Whit Merrifield, you know, because he's one of those guys. It's hard. It's almost impossible not to root for him. I can't imagine anyone being, oh, I hate that guy, or you know, he doesn't deserve this, or whatever. You know, I think everyone would agree and would say Whit Merrifield is absolutely deserving of the success he's had. He's not only just from the standpoint of, hey, he's a good guy and good people deserve success, but also just that he's put in the work. I mean, he, you know, Clint Scholes has told us how in the off season he really worked on a lot of that launch angle stuff and tried to, you know, he's really tried to work up his power in past couple of years, you know, to be a different level than it was the minors, and it's paid off. You know, he's not like some super huge power guy, but you know, you never thought, or we never thought that we'd get, you know, that kind of 15 home run type power from Whit Merrifield, and here he is. You know, that seems to be the kind of guy that he is now. And to have the season he's having with the slash line that he's having, where he's at 304, 369, 442 on the season. He's got a 123 OPS plus. I mean, it just, the only thing that really does is it makes me more angry that he wasn't the all-star for the Royals, because good Lord, he should have been. Yeah. 12 home runs on the season, 58 RBIs. I mean, we talked about 42 doubles, 40 stolen bases. I mean, he's been caught stealing 10 times. So that's 80%. Stone Day's success rate. I mean, that's very good. And we've talked about that before. I don't know if we brought it up this year, but in years past, how when trying to, because I think there's been a slight resurgence of the stolen base here in the last couple of years or so. But, you know, in the mid to late 2000s, I think it was really on the downtick. And I think there was a lot of data to suggest that, you know, if you can't steal bases at above a 75% clip, then it's not worth it, because it does, over the course of a season, it hurts you more than it helps you. So, you know, but there's, of course, different takes on that. But regardless, 80% is above that threshold, well above, in terms of stolen bases, and it's a really good success rate. And he's just had a fantastic season. And it's, you know, we keep saying that, but it keeps needing to be said. And he's it's, you know, he's unfortunate. The only unfortunate thing in the saga of Whit Merrifield is that he was in the minors for so long, he's already 29 years old. So, you know,
right.
If this team is able to, if the organization is able to build a contending team in the next few years, you know, who knows what'll happen with him? Because, you know, as we've seen with players like Alex Gordon, it can fall off and it can fall off quick. So I hope that Whit Merrifield, since he got kind of a late start on his success, that maybe it lasts a little bit longer than some others. But, you know, that's the only unfortunate thing I could think about the story of Whit Merrifield, because he's had a fantastic season, and it's only just building off of what he's had the previous season and a half that he's been with this team. So, you know, it's, as far as milestones go, that's one of the most impressive, his 40 stolen base, 40 doubles, and totally deserved. He's had a fantastic season, and I don't think that should be undersold.
Yep. He's been by far their best player, and Nindel Mondesi wasn't really close, but I would still say, you know, he's done it for a full season, and he's been, you know, red hot at some times and just generally pretty good. So, yeah. I guess if we consider that this was like a pseudo 2011 type of season, I wouldn't say quite the same, because that was definitely a buildup of a lot of guys that you had expectations for. But, like, you know, this is a first baseman that you can kind of believe in, a third baseman that kind of works out, and now you've got Mondesi at short. So there's three guys right there on the infield that can jump right in and be big leaguers, and that you kind of expect going into next year, those guys are setting themselves up for being definite front runners, if not locks, on those positions next season. And so then that puts you on kind of a timeline. And then if that group behind them, the Khalil Lees, the Nick Prados, the MJ Melendez, the Sully Matias, the, you know, all of those guys down in the minors, if they start to develop and they get to where they're a couple years away, and then you get Brady Singer and Jackson Cower and Dan Lynch you know, all the other pitchers down there, you know, then you start to see a wave behind this group, which that second wave never came the first time around. It was Hosmer, Moose, and the rest, and it just kind of kept waiting, and that next wave never came, unless you count, you know, James Shields and Wade Davis as Will Myers,
mm-hmm.
because of the trade. And so, you know, maybe that does accelerate the idea that the Royals have for when they'll contend, or maybe it does set up to where they're winning games a lot more in 2020, and then 2021 they take that step. You know, Whit Merrifield should still be around for that, unless for some reason they trade him or he falls off or what have you. But the way he's worked and the way his game is, it feels like he's going to be around for a bit. We did say that about Alex Gordon, though, too. So, you know, that caveat does apply. So, but right now, great season. I mean, he's going to hit 300. He's going to have close to 200 hits. He's not going to get there quite unless he just goes crazy.
Yeah, he'll be close. Cleveland.
Yeah, but you can have no complaints about Whit Merrifield. He's been great.
Yeah, and I mean, if you were to try and break it down, kind of like what you were talking about, where you have, you know, who do you start next year? Who do you go into next year with? You know, Salvador Perez obviously behind the plate, and then you can have someone like Ryan O'Hearn, maybe at first base, who continues to just, you know, really, I mean, he's got 12 home runs in 40 games. That's, I mean, right.
It's almost a 50 home run pace. Yeah.
And then you've got Alberto Mondesi, who, when you break it down and you look at his his splits, I mean, he's like, it's just, it continues to be more and more encouraging. I mean, for the season, he's hitting 281 against right-handed pitchers. He's hitting 286 against left-handed pitchers. I mean, you expect pretty good splits given that he's a switch hitter, but you know, at the same time, it's encouraging to actually see it happen in the results. And you know, he's, even if you break it down, I'm looking at his splits here. So over the last month, he's hit over 300 with a 333 on base and a 553 slugging, which, you know, we definitely did not expect from Mondesi.
No.
But even if you know, if you go back over the last 365 days, which well, I guess that doesn't really help that too much, but never mind, because it's only a few, that only encompasses a few games from last year. But I thought I did more when I first looked at it. But I mean, just his 2018 totals. He's got, you know, 282 batting average, 306 on base, 490 slugging. He's got 12 home runs. 12 home runs. I don't think many people expected that from Mondesi, you know, and that's 70 games. So that's like a 25 yeah. home run pace for the season, almost 30.
For your shortstop, yeah. who could steal 50 bases a year?
Yeah. I mean, he's already got, he's like, got 26 okay. stolen bases. So yeah, I mean, put that over a whole season and you've got almost 60 stolen bases. And then if he just keeps that slash line, I mean, he's, wow, that's really yeah. impressive. So I, you know, who knows if it's going to continue, but the thing that I like and about Mondesi is we're starting to hear those, when people discuss him, we're starting to hear those superlatives that we were hearing a few years ago about him, you know, things like
yep. the tools being
yes,
realized.
Yeah.
Now.
Things like, you know, the words like rare and unique and things like that, you know, those were what we heard when he was first signed by the Royals and when he was coming through the system. And they kind of tapered off as he was had his struggles and the Royals, you know, brought him up, sent him down. He had his suspension, all that kind of stuff. But, you know, now people, now that he's been doing it for a extended period of time, they are most definitely, they have, they've those terms and phrases have started to crop up again. And that's really exciting because I think people are getting excited about him more so than they were. And, you know, it's one of those things where he didn't just start off really hot when he first came up. Cause sometimes you see that you look back at a player and you think, oh, okay, you know, their stat line looks pretty good. But then if you were to break it down, you'd say, okay,
yeah, it was like
nobody,
a big April and they
yeah,
just
nobody
kind of
knew what to expect. This guy's a rookie. And then once they figured him out, it was something really easy. Like, hey, he can't hit breaking balls. And then he never did anything, but he was so good that one month that it looks better. You know, well, that's not what's happened with Mondesi. He actually was the opposite. He started off pretty poor, and we were kind of like, well, this is what we've seen from him, you know, just looking for some steady improvement. And that's exactly what we got. And it continued. It was even more than steady improvement. It was, you know, pretty fast. And then the last few weeks to a month, you know, he's really just kind of seemed to really grab hold. And it's been fun to watch him continue to mature as a player. And if you start the season with O'Hearn at first and Merrifield at second and Mondesi at short and then Salvador Perez behind the plate, I mean, that's looking pretty good for an infield already, assuming again that yeah. you know, there's, it's more than just a flash in the pan for guys like Ryan O'Hearn, but and of course Mondesi. So but that's exciting stuff. I'm excited about what I've seen for Mondesi because I was definitely not at the point where I had like given up, but I had realigned my expectations where I had said, you know, I don't think he's right. going to be that star player anymore. I think he can just be essentially Alcides Escobar 2.0, which is not bad. You know, he provided a lot of value to this organization for a lot of years. Escobar did. So, you know, there are worse things than being Escobar at his, you know, peak Escobar, I should say, is what I was thinking.
Right.
The 2013, 14, 15 Escobar, you know.
Sure.
So peak Escobar, that's okay. That's fine. I'm fine with that. I had resigned myself to that, but now I'm thinking, okay, now we can look past that. You know, that's been established as the floor for him now, I think, and we can move past to having something a little bit more than what we had with Escobar, and that's exciting stuff.
Yeah, you don't, it almost sets you up to get your heart broken, but I don't know. I mean, he's definitely made adjustments in approach. He's swinging at better pitches. He's laying off the bad pitches that he used to chase. He still will chase, but you know, not as often. Contact is higher quality. There's a good piece on FanGraphs that also shows kind of the graphical representation of this, and it's a very clear pivot of, hey, he's swinging at less junk and swinging at better stuff. And launch angle, you know, I mean, that's kind of the thing. His launch angle is a little bit better too. So in all facets, he's just been much better at the plate. And whether he can continue it to this extent to where, you know, he's hitting 280, maybe, maybe not. You know, if he hits 250 and can walk a touch more but still give you that 15 home run power and 50 stolen bases, that's still really good. You know, it's maybe not all-star caliber, but it's still pretty good. And, you know, still plenty exciting for a guy that for a while there looked completely overmatched and you had to kind of question if he was ever going to get it figured out. Right now it looks like something clicked. He's got it figured out. And it's got to give him confidence going into, you know, next year to where he knows right off the bat he's probably your starting shortstop. He's probably, you know, your number two hitter, like he's been doing lately. I mean, they batted him ninth for a long time, and they finally over the last couple of weeks have been hitting him second because it's just like, get him more at-bats. Yeah. You know, he's totally comfortable doing it. It's not like you kind of got to put him in that nine spot because you kind of want to protect him and limb exposure and everything. It's like, now let's get him to the top of the lineup, and he's been creating havoc. So just very exciting. He might be one of the best players in the division next year. Some people have said, oh, he'll be the best middle infielder in the division. I'm like,
Lindor will still be in this division.
That's real tough. And people have compared him to that. I'm not there yet, but, you know, if he does this kind of stuff again next year, 25 homers, 50 some steals.
Yeah, then let's talk.
Then he's in that range. Until he does that, you know, still very, very exciting. But, you know, I can temper expectations. Mike Avilas was really good. Ryan Sheely was really good.
Angel Baroa was really good.
Mark Quinn was really good. Angel Baroa. I've seen a lot of really good players who did it for 1 year or half a year. I'm honestly probably the most talented of any of those. But, you know, still, you know, still I think it's fair to ask him to prove it. And he probably will. But, you know, that's why I can't get quite to that level. But that'd be awesome.
That would certainly be awesome. And, don't want to get too ahead of myself, but that would be fantastic. The Lindor comparison. I am not there yet either, but, it's good that
people
are bringing it up,
but
because,
yeah.
And it's one of those things, like when you talk about a comparison like that, even if he's 85-90% of what Lindor is, that Lindor's so good that it's like, okay, that's still a really good all-star caliber player. So that's okay. He doesn't have to be as good as him to be incredibly good, you know. But moving on to some other positive milestones here. Salvador Perez. So he's had kind of a quiet season, I guess, given that, you know, there hasn't been nearly as many Gatorade dumps as in the past few years. And it's, you know, as the season has kind of, you know, decided itself in the sense that the Royals were eliminated from contention so quickly, I think they did the smart thing and tried to limit as much as possible the innings that Perez was taking, you know, on his knees. So he's only played 125 games, and, you know, that's a good thing. I'm definitely okay with that. But that said, he's hit 27 home runs, which ties his career high from last year. And so if he hits another home run within the next four games here, then he'd be setting a new career high for home runs for him. So, you know, it's – he – has continued his trend of, you know, just that batting average just slowly dwindling away over the season. He's at 235 now with a just ugly 275 on base. Yeah. You know, his OPS 717, that's okay, but you want better than that. And he's got a 93 OPS plus. I mean, it's not super great, but you know, the home runs are nice, and he's got 77 RBIs, which is again pretty nice. So, you know, in a season that's hard to take a ton away from, it's at least, you know, that's a nice little positive. And I think when Perez came up and first started hitting, I don't know what people thought about the kind of power that he would have and if he'd be able to sustain. But I mean, not only has he sustained power, but he's essentially increased not by a ton, but he's essentially increased his power output every year that he's been in the majors. So if that trend were to continue again this year, even just by one home run, that's still pretty cool. And you know, if guys like Mondesi and, you know, Merrifield's obviously proven it, but guys like Mondesi step up and O'Hearn steps up and they go into next season, and maybe you can put Salvi in the middle of those guys and kind of protect him a little bit more than he was this year, because there really wasn't a whole lot for teams to key on besides him. I mean, Moose they had for most of the year, but you know, Lucas Duda, I guess. But you know, that for most of the year there wasn't a ton that the teams really had to key on, so they just had to concentrate on getting Salvi out, and they were able to. So, but hopefully, you know, if next year, if some of these young players continue what they're doing, it'll put them in a lot better position to where, you know, he can keep power numbers, but then maybe tick those other numbers up a little bit.
Yeah, he still chases, you know, the breaking ball down on a way. I mean, I think I saw something at some point today or maybe yesterday that they keep throwing him that breaking ball out of the zone, and he keeps chasing it, and it's like it's basically only one for one. It's like it just keeps going up. But yeah, if he gets one more homer, it'll be every single year of his career he's increased his home run output from the year before. So in 7 years he might be hitting, you know, 45, 50 homers at that kind of rate. But yeah, it's his. You know, he's never going to be a guy who walks a whole lot. This will be his fifth straight year with an OPS under 300 or an on base under 300. OPS that under 300.
Should not be on this team. Anymore,
it's like you can throw out all the guys you want if that's all you're doing. You know, and it's a lot of it is just slug. I mean, he's hitting for so much power, but he doesn't get on base in a whole lot of other ways. Which, you know, in some ways, you know, what he provides defensively in the clubhouse and in, you know, throwing guys out and controlling the running game, he still gives you a value. He's hitting 235, but has a 2.3 wins above replacement, according to Baseball Reference. That's not awful. I mean, it's not necessarily like the, oh my God, he's a Hall of Famer that you thought in, like, you know, 2013. Right. You know, not that anybody's really seriously saying that, but, like, you know, the sky's the limit for this guy. No, he's kind of, you kind of see where the leaks are, and where he's capped and what his production can be. And, you know, he's probably best case, a guy who, you know, his ceiling's probably hitting about 275, which puts him in the range of maybe a 315 on base. But the power is there. You know, he's going to get you 25 doubles and 25 homers, and for a guy who does all those other things, I mean, that's got a lot of value. It's not quite, you know, the ridiculous expectations we might have had early in his career, but, you know, it still puts him into the realm of a really productive guy who could hit, you know, fifth for you in a lineup. If you've got some guys on, you can drive in runs and then go behind the plate and keep guys from stealing bases. And, you know, I think as long as he's doing that, that's fine. You know, if some of that starts to slip, if he has to move to first, then you start to have to ask the questions. But, you know, for right now, you just want to see him hit one more homer and kind of hit that milestone of a new career high and, you know, give him something going into next season. And, you know, and there you have it.
Yeah. You know, it's in a season like this, you have to mine the little things to be positive about. So, we kind of mentioned as well, Ryan O'Hearn. We've kind of talked about him throughout, but just to give him another special mention, you know, he's 12 home runs in 40 games. You know, I mean, like we said, that's a close to a 50 home run pace for the whole season. He's got a 1,005 OPS. He's got a 169 OPS plus. Again, 40 games, but, you know, as we talk about, whenever we hit that 40th game of the season at the beginning of the year, that's where you can start to make assessments, where you can say, okay, there's at least a reasonable basis for making an assumption on whether someone can continue a sort of pace or not. So he's hit that mark now, even though it wasn't the first 40 games of the season. You know, he's at 40 games, and he's hit, you know, if he was off to this start at the first 40 games of the season, I mean, people would be talking league MVP. So, yeah, again, you know, it's crazy. The context is much different, and that does not need to be ignored. But it also does not need to be ignored how well he's played in this last, you know, quarter of the season. So he's a guy that nobody was really quite sure, I don't think, what we were going to get from him. You know, some people were thinking, okay, he might be able to be a solid player. Some people were thinking he doesn't have it. Well, he's got something. And, you know, he's proving it this year, and it's definitely going to be worth exploring for the Royals in the offseason when they get to spring training and stuff like that. I mean, you've got to think he's a front runner to be at first base to start the season next year. And yeah, that's
– there's not really anybody to displace
him. Standing in his way. So that's fun stuff. Again, and he's only 24 years old. So he – you know, that's – again, another part of that this could be young core that they're developing. And like we've discussed in the past, you know, if the Royals are targeting a 2020-21 type resurgence, you know, it can't just be the big names that we all know that have that end up being right. Good. I mean, those names have to be, but you need the other guys as well. And Ryan O'Hearn is somebody like that. So if he can come in next year and he can come out of the gate without missing a beat, and he can do this for a whole season, man, that's something. I don't think the home run pace, you know, I don't think that's going to be easy for him to go over a full season, because it's not, you know, 50 home run pace, not easy for anybody over a full season.
Right.
He, you know, if he can hit 25, I mean, shoot, then you've got, you know, Salvador Perez. And then if what we said about Mondesi ends up being correct, and then, you know, Merrifield. I mean, that's a lot of good hitters and some good home run power in there. If, you know, Perez with 25 home run power, and over the extrapolating their stats over the course of a season, O'Hearn and Mondesi having 25 home run power, you know, all those right at the top of your lineup there, that's pretty solid. You know, you'll take that to start a season, and then hopefully that second wave, like you said, keeps coming up. But I'm happy to see Ryan O'Hearn have some success, because, you know, we've talked about talked about O'Hearn in this context before recently, but just kind of that Cardinals type way of where
the surprise guy who he's a legend.
Yeah, he's
now,
a league
out of
MVP
nowhere
candidate, I guess. Well, you know, that's never
some guy you just forgot about.
That never there seems to happen to the Royals. And here's Ryan O'Hearn. But again, as you mentioned, lots of names, not only in baseball, but in Royals history, that have come through and had a good 40-game stretch or a good half a season or whatever and ended up being nothing. So not saying that O'Hearn's going to be a stud, but it's been really promising what he's seen. And going into the next season, I think he's an exciting name to keep an eye on for sure.
Just to go back to what you said about, like, if he was doing this at the start of the year, right close to him is, you know, Jorge Soler, who, you know, played 61 games before he was shut down. But back in, you know, late April, he was just tearing it up, and he looked like all the promise that everybody thought going back to when he signed with the Cubs and came up with the Cubs, it was finally being realized. 61 games, he hit .265, got on base at a .354 clip. O'Hearn hitting .271, on base of .366. And, you know, for as good as Soler was, you know, you remember how good he was at just hitting the ball out and hit a bunch of doubles. He had 18 doubles and 9 homers in 61 games. Really pretty good numbers there. O'Hearn's slugging is, you know, 160, 170 points higher than what Soler's was. So for as good as Soler was, add about 200 points of OPS. It's like, wow, that's pretty darn good. So, yeah, I mean, Soler turbocharged is pretty much what O'Hearn's done. Can he keep it up? I don't know. I mean, I didn't figure he would keep it up much past, you know, when he first kind of started getting hot. And he's just kind of been doing it the whole time. So, you know, every time I start to doubt him, he just goes and hits a double and a homer and, you know, calls it good. So it's like, all right, he's going to keep doing it, I guess, until he doesn't. I'll stop doubting him, I suppose. So, yeah, really exciting. And to get someone that, you know, went unprotected last offseason in the Rule 5 draft, could have been taken by anybody. First baseman usually don't get picked, but, you know, he was still available there. There might be some teams that are really kind of, you know, kicking themselves over that. Whit Merrifield as well a few years ago. Same kind of situation. So the Royals kind of got their cardinal breakouts out of those two guys this year. So if they both continue that, yeah, that's a definite help to anything in the future. And it's about time they got some of the lesser touted players to have some kind of a breakout. So,
absolutely.
Real exciting. Yes.
So, any other bright spots you want to cover before we move on to the next topic?
Oh, just at a brief glance. You know, if I told you that Ian Kennedy had an ERA plus of 93, would you be surprised? Because I would.
Yeah.
The way his season's gone, he's come back from the DL and pitched pretty well. Heath Philmeyer struck out 9 tonight through 7 plus. So, you know, had no expectations for him. So for him to come in and do anything is really nice. And Brad Keller was really strong. I don't think he's going to pitch again this year. 140 innings, 139 ERA plus, 3.08 ERA. Real solid. So those are kind of the other high points, really. Not so much like round number milestone type things, but guys who have kind of performed and definitely, you know, surpassed expectations. Especially Keller, who was like, you know, you're a Rule 5 guy. Who knows? You know, right. You might not make it out of spring training. Might not make it past the third week of spring training before you get, you know, tossed back. But the Royals had opportunity to give him, and he got into games and pitched well and just improved as the season got on. And, you know, looks like a really nice find right now that pretty much anybody could have had. And the Royals got him. Philmeyer stepped up, you know, former shortstop. A few years ago, he was shortstop, you know. So he hasn't even been pitching that much. And now he's in the big leagues. And granted, it was the Reds, but he also struck out Joey Votto on, you know, a pitch that kind of wrapped him up and got like a check swing strikeout. So, you know, he looked good and he's looking better and better pretty much every time he goes out. So bright spots of just kind of finding guys, which has always been difficult for the Royals, just find pitchers. Even the well-regarded ones haven't turned out in a lot of cases. So to find a couple that, you know, you didn't have much in the way of expectations, that's, you know, that's definite positive for them.
Absolutely. So with that, we'll move on to our next topic, and it's something we wanted to discuss. So we're getting down to the end of the season here, and as always, that means playoff discussion. So with the Royals out of it, of course, not much to discuss on our end, but there was an interesting idea brought up by John Smoltz recently, and his thought was, in order to kind of increase engagement in baseball from a fan perspective, one of the things that should be done is a total shakeup of how the season is organized, how it operates in terms of, you know, the regular season and how that feeds into the playoffs. His idea, of course, being that the season should be split into halves. So you have a first half and a second half. You know, I mean, obviously, of course, by nature, anything has a half, but, you know, an official split of the half, excuse me. And then you have a first half champion and a second half champion, and they go head to head, and then that's your playoffs right there. So that's kind of interesting as an idea, and just kind of wanted to discuss that. And the model, I don't know that it's necessarily the model that Smoltz is using, but that people kind of point to is the 1981 season, which was strike shortened, but it had that format, the season one winner versus the season two winner. So just to start it off, pros and cons, pro being, you know, a situation like the Royals are in now where, you know, the second half of the season, the Royals still wouldn't be any sort of a second half champion right now, but they at least would have been in the mix a little bit more because they started to play better down the stretch. And it allows for teams like that to just, you know, not have a terrible first half of the season and then just completely give up, you know, which we see far too often in baseball, unfortunately. So that would be a huge positive, you know. And similarly, you know, if a team had a really good start to the season but had some injury troubles in the second half and kind of, you know, faded, they'd still be able to, you know, get credit for that first half of the season that they had that was really good. So the negatives, of course, being that they were discussing this on the radio this morning, and someone had pointed out that I believe it might have been the Reds that season had the best record in baseball but didn't actually qualify for the playoffs because even though they had the best record, they didn't win the first half or the second half of the season. So that it kind of takes away that aspect of baseball that's always been that the traditionalists point to where, you know, it's rewarding excellence over an extended period of time. That's the hook with baseball. You know, you can – when it comes to football – you know, you can have a team like the New York Giants in 2011 who goes 9-7, but they just had a good run to end the season and they have a good run through the playoffs and then that's it. They win. You know, that doesn't really happen in baseball because, you know, even a team that has the best month of its franchise's history, it's just one month. It's not going to make your whole season. Mm-hmm. You know, football is different that way. It can. You know, and you can get on a similar run to a lesser degree, but in, you know, basketball, hockey, et cetera. So that's part of what makes baseball so unique is that you just have to have that sustained level of excellence for so long. And this format kind of removes that and takes that out of play. So that would obviously be the biggest thing that people don't like. Me personally, I don't know. I don't know exactly where I come out on it. I like more than the idea of this particular format being adopted, the idea of shaking up the format quite a bit. I definitely, you know, I've long thought that the playoffs should be given a bit more emphasis and had a, you know, to be more indicative of excellence over a longer period. So I've always thought that you should, or I guess recent years I've thought they should cut the season down quite a bit and then extend the length of the playoff series. So, you know, that's a different topic, but it's hard to really say. I like the idea of how it would kind of eliminate some of the tanking. If a team has a bad start to the season, just trade everybody mm-hmm. off and then tank the rest of the way. It would eliminate some of that. So that'd be good. But you know, overall, I'm not sure, but I like the idea of, you know, let's try and shake this thing up and let's find a better way to make things more engaging. Cause it was essentially half the league this year that, you know, come July, none of their fan bases had any hope of competing this year. So that kind of sucks. And this would be able to eliminate that. So that's at least a positive.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think 81 is so it's so unique just because it was a solution to a big problem that they had a 6-week gap in the middle of the season that just, you know, what are you going to do about that? You know, there's not much to be done. They had to kind of make the best of it. The Royals made the playoffs that year. Their overall record was 50-53, but in the second half they were 30-23. You know, was that Oakland didn't play as hard. Oakland won in the first half by a handful of games. The Royals were 20-30 in the first half. Oakland, once they resumed, they already had a playoff spot. So how much were they really trying in the second half? you know, I think that's one concern. There's not as much incentive for that first team, because what they did, the approach they took here was that if, say, Oakland had won in the second half as well as the first half, the runner-up would have just made the playoff spot, and they would have played a divisional series to see who would advance. I don't know if that's the best way to do it. You know, it's so they'd probably have to figure that detail. I think it's just so – it's to take the minor leagues as the basis, the minors are so specific in the way they do it, because it's not always every level. It's, you know, usually the lower levels where you're going to have teams where, you know, your best prospects might start in A ball but finish the year in double A or triple A. And so do you really want to have a team that loses all their stars from a good first half, you know, get penalized because of the second half? Maybe not. But if they play well in that first half, that's why they kind of consider that the first half winner. And then the second half winner is obviously second half winner. I don't know if it would really change the tanking either. I think maybe you'd have a few more teams that were involved. You know, if you had maybe two trade deadlines, a first half and second half trade deadline, that might make it interesting, because you could go for it in the first one. If you didn't make it, you could trade them off later for the second one. But I think you're still going to have teams that have payroll concerns and development concerns, and like they want to get those veterans and flip them for prospects. And those are still going to be things that are probably part of the strategy for teams that are rebuilding, or even in that middle range. So I don't know if it's going to change that all that much if they went halfway.
So here's something too that I hadn't really thought of until just now, but what if in a particular division or whatever, you know, I guess I don't know, do they just do it by league? So the first winner, the I guess the leagues would be then you'd have essentially four teams. But what if it was the same team? Then what do you do? Do they just get a bye essentially? And then, because I'm assuming the goal would be you'd have first half winner of the American League, second half winner of the American League versus, you know, they play, and then the winner, and then the winner goes to the World Series and plays the winner of the NL version of that. But if the same team won the AL first half and second half, would they just get a bye and just go straight to the World Series? I guess I don't know how that would work either.
Yeah, and then you've got three divisions in each league. So then what? So I don't know. I think maybe if they were to adjust it, you know, I don't know. Maybe it would make teams call up their guys sooner, because if you have your guy starting April 1st or whatever the first day of the year is, instead of, you know, fudging their service time until May 12th or whatever, so that they maybe are on the border of that Super 2 status and you get an extra year of service time and all that. You know, maybe with 5-6 weeks more of, you know, Ronald Acuna in your lineup, you know, maybe you call him up sooner. The Braves still made the playoffs despite that. But, you know, if it means that you get a chance to take a shot in that first half, then, yeah, maybe teams would try that. But I don't know. I think it's tough to split it by half. I could almost... I don't know. I just don't know that it makes it that much more interesting to me. Like, there are still teams like the Royals. The Royals coming into this year, would they have really had that much of a shot to do anything differently? I don't know that they would have. The Orioles, the Reds, the Marlins. I mean, I don't see how any of those teams would really be in a position to be that much better or have that much more of a shot. And if they were in a position, like let's say the Royals were in the range of the second half playoff spot, would they still derail what could be, you know, a couple of years of potential team control of some guys to just go get a veteran to see if it puts them over the top so they can just make it into a spot? I don't know that teams would do that. I don't know if it would change too much. I mean, I guess you'd have to see it in practice to really know. You know, I think what they could do is maybe have first and second place of each division play each other. And, you know, if you lead the division, you only have to win one game. If you trail, then you have to win two games in a row or something. But then, you know, again, there are three divisions. So then how do you match that up? So then do you realign into two divisions again? I doubt they would go that far. You know, at the very least, I think what they could do is instead of a wild card game, have a best of three series, just so that it's not a kind of a fluke. You know, to be honest with you, the Royals probably don't beat the A's if it's a three-game series
no.
in 2014. The A's had better pitching, but, you know, you got that one moment, that one game, and anything can happen. Is that good or bad? I don't know. I would say it's good because it was wildly entertaining. I don't know. I don't know if it needs to be, you know, overhauled completely. I sure don't think first half, second half is, you know, the way to do it. The expectation is that you're going to have these players pretty much all season. The core of each major league team is probably going to be there most of the year. So I don't know that you have to really worry about, you know, it's not set up the same as the minor leagues. I don't know if there's enough teams that would be in it to give it a shot. And then, you know, how would they approach it? Would they really buy into it, or would it just end up where if you're not in it in the first half, do you sell off even faster? I think there's just a lot of things that don't really fit for me for the whole idea to work. I mean, it's not bad to, you know, think about it, but it's just, I just don't think it's as simple as to say. It's more exciting in the minors because there are first half and second half winners. It's a whole different situation.
Yeah. I just kind of thought it was an interesting idea, and I'm mostly on board with shaking things up. So that probably isn't the answer, but interesting to think about, as you said. So as we talked about the playoffs, we'll kind of wrap up here with just a look into the playoffs. Obviously the Royals are not involved in any capacity, and the American League is pretty well set. You know, Houston, I heard an interesting stat just before we got on to record. The Astros have won 100 games for the second year in a row, and they are, I think only they said, the second team in history to win 100 games in two consecutive seasons and lose 100 games in two consecutive seasons within the same decade in history. So pretty impressive. But they don't even have the best record in the American League. They're a bunch of games behind the Red Sox, who are 106-51. They're having a fantastic season and, would appear to be the favorites to win the World Series. But that only takes you so far. But the National League is way more interesting. So right now there is, 6 teams all between 87 and 91 wins with four or five games to play. So it's possible, in the realm of possibility, that 8 teams could wind up with 91 wins. You know, that would mean a few things. So like right now, the Cubs and the Brewers both at 91 wins, they'd have to lose out. The odds of that happening are pretty slim, especially given that they're, you know, both fighting against each other for the central crown. And then of course some other teams like the Rockies and stuff would have to win out. But all the same, it's pretty wild that could happen. And even if it doesn't happen, you know, you could have the Rockies and the Dodgers tied for the lead in the West. The Rockies are a half game back now. And then whoever that team is, whoever would win that and win the division, the loser would then be tied with the Cardinals for the wild card. And so for the second wild card spot. Because whoever between the Cubs and the Brewers, whoever loses the division from them is going to be the first wild card. So then you're looking at kind of this the dream scenario that we've talked about in the last few years, you know, where you have this like weird tie.
I want the chaos badly.
So you'd have to have a game 163 between the Dodgers and the Rockies to decide who wins the West. And then you'd have to have a game 163/4 between the loser of that game and the Cardinals to see who gets that second wild card. But then, like, how is that even fair? Because then, you know, when do you play that? How much time do you give? Do you delay the entire playoffs to give enough time in between? Because that's not really fair to the loser. I mean, think about how, you know, you could go from possibly winning the division to completely out of the playoffs just because you lost a game and then you had to turn around the next day and you lose to another team who was fresh. You know, that's nuts. But I want to see it happen. I think it would be super fun, and it would even be more fun if there was, you know, if the all the ties were even more. So, I mean, you could have, theoretically, you could have the, I don't know if that would make any difference. I don't think it would, but because the Braves are pretty much sewn up, or though they have sewn up the division in the East.
Yeah, they're not going to get
caught. And so, you know, technically the Braves, Dodgers, and Rockies could all be tied, but I don't think that would impact anything with the Braves being in, because they just win the division. So
just on seeding, really.
And they don't have game playoffs for seeding, because I'm sure there's some tiebreaker down the line they could go to, but that'd be interesting, man. I would love to see that happen in the National League. And it's fun, you know, and the Brewers are right in the thick of things, and they are, you know, chocked full of past Royals. I think
they won tonight too.
There you go. And, you know, Lorenzo Cain is having a fantastic season for them. He appears to be, you know, at least this year, worth the money they've paid so far. Mike Moustakas has done well since he's been there. So yeah, the Brewers are a really fun team to watch right now. And it's easy to root for them because they've got some players that we've been rooting for years. So, and, you know, the Brewers winning their division would mean that the Cardinals and the Cubs lose that division. Even though one or both may still make the playoffs, but regardless, that's good. So I think I'm rooting for the Brewers the rest of the way. I think you're probably on the same page with me on that.
Yeah. I mean, the Braves are pretty fun too, but the Brewers are, like, you know, all the Royals connections. It's super fun. And they've taken to, like, in the same way that Sal Perez would point out Lorenzo Cain and try to get him to be embarrassed by the attention, the Brewers as a whole team do that. So that's really fun to see. And Kane continues to play it as the straight man, even though I think he really enjoys it. Yeah, I want to see the chaos, though. I remember in 2014, down to the last game of the year, that Sunday, the Royals were, they were a game behind Detroit. And there was a potential where, obviously, Detroit had lost and the Royals had won. They would have been tied for the division. They would have had to play for the division before going to a wild card. So the Royals could have ended up where they had to use James Shields to determine the division. And then if they lost, would have gone on to play the A's with, you know, their number two starter, which I guess would have been Jason Vargas. A whole lot of things could have changed there. But as it turned out, the Tigers won. Didn't matter. You know, sixth inning of the Royals game, the Tigers had already won. So they, you know, pulled everybody because who cares? They had their spot. They were already hosting the wild card. But the other thing is that over the last couple of years, they start all the games on the last day of the year at the same time. So you could have this situation where you've got the NL Central, you know, neck and neck, last game of the year decides it for each team. You could have the wild card in the same spot. You could have that whole chaos situation ready to blow if things lined up all in one day. So you'd have like four games to keep track of to see if it happened. And then you'd have like three games before you could actually have like the real playoffs. You'd have the NL Central division. You'd have maybe a wild card play in, and then the actual wild card. It'd be freaking crazy.
Yes.
And then you go into the playoffs. It's like, oh, well, dang. Like, I want that to happen. I don't know how they would schedule it. I think there's only one or two off days, two, maybe it's three. I don't know. But then you'd also have teams flying all over the place to play, to take care of these, because someone's got to be the home team. So just, it's just crazy. I want it to happen. The AL's all set. That's boring.
Yeah.
The only question there really is who's going to host the wild card game and then who's going to beat Cleveland.
Yeah.
They're not that good. They're, you know, they played in the worst division.
Cleveland has feasted upon a
yeah.
I mean, good God, they would be. What is this, 9 games behind the Yankees if they were in the same division, and the Yankees are 9 games behind the Red Sox, and they'd be
six and a half behind Oakland.
Yep. Who is 5.5 behind Houston. So they have feasted upon, and they're only a game better than the Rays, who are not in the playoff picture right now. And they're third place in their division. And only a game and a half better than the Seahawks or the Seahawks. God, football on this. It's already football season. Seahawks. The Mariners.
Yeah.
So I mean, they have feasted upon a very poor division, so who knows what's going to happen with them. But I feel like sometimes we've seen that before, and then that team, just nobody expects them, but then they come up and they'll probably sweep the Red Sox or something. Cause it's,
probably. It's, I mean, the Royals did that to – Royals did that to the Angels.
Yep,
so.
That's exactly right. So,
Anyway,
I think that's all we've covered or all we wanted to cover for the night. Did you have anything additional you wanted to – to discuss?
I did not.
Okay.
I'm out of notes.
All right. That's what I like to hear. We covered it all. So that's it for this show. We'll be back in 2 weeks, right? We're going to switch.
Yeah.
As we're now entering the off season, it'll be off season before it'll be off season before we record next. We've decided that this coming off season that we're going to go every 2 weeks instead of every week. We love you guys. We love putting out content every week, but we've just had a lot of life stuff, and it's basically been just every other week for the last couple months anyway. So we figured, you know what? It'll just be easier if we just
lean into it.
Yeah. We'll just make it every 2 weeks. And then, as the season kicks off next year, then we'll switch back to the weekly format. So, as we go forward into the off season, it'll be every 2 weeks. So from now on, it'll be every 2 weeks. So we'll see you again in 2 weeks, but, regardless of whether it's just, 1 week or 2 weeks, we so appreciate all of you and all our listeners. And if you're in that period, if you're longing for some Royals, be sure to visit our sponsors, BP Kansas City. Of course, we're still there's no days off. There's no biweekly content there. It's every day, off season or not. There'll be plenty of content there. And even though Royals season is all but over, you can still go to Kelly's Westport Inn. And football season is here if you're a football fan as well. Always a great place to watch a Chiefs game or any football game, really. Kelly's is definitely a good place for that. So don't be sure to or be sure not to to neglect them, even though the Royals are done. But anyway, we'll leave you with that. So we'll see you again in 2 weeks. Until then, thank you all so much for stopping by. And as always, go Royals.
Thank you for listening to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can follow us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City at bpkansascity.com. You can follow BPKC on Twitter at bprokansascity. Also, you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, through Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you like. And if you have any questions, comments, or if you just want to say hi, send those emails to kansascitybaseballvault@gmail.com.